The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, my name is Demi Arsenault from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the spring 2020 issue of Lion Magazine. We'll begin today with our president's message entitled, In Times of Darkness, Be the Light. Sometimes it's hard to find our way. In the dawn of 2020, our world has been thrust into a great trial. The past few months have seen countries, including my own, tested to their limits. Many people are facing new realities that challenge their ability to make ends meet and provide enough food and essentials to keep their families safe. And many first responders, doctors, nurses, police officers, grocery store clerks, among many others, are putting themselves on the line every day to save lives. It is a dark time. It is easy to give in to fear, but we cannot. This is a time to act. What that action looks like in the face of lockdowns, quarantines, and social distancing may look very different from service as we've known it. We have to put health and safety first. But now is not the time to shrink away from the new and different. Now is the time to tap into the innovation that Lions are known for so we can find new ways to help. There is so much uncertainty in the world right now. In these extraordinary times, let's rededicate ourselves to service. Let's become the lights that guide our world through this period of darkness. In my dark moments, and there have been some for me too these past months, I'd like to imagine every lion as a candle in the window. I see lions serving meals to low-income children because schools are closed, making sure they don't miss a meal. I see lions delivering groceries to elderly neighbors who are the most vulnerable to the virus. I see clubs hosting meetings online so they can stay connected and continue to find ways to give back. Every day, I see lions putting their kindness in action, and I am lifted. Now, imagine how bright the world would be with all our candles flickering together, shining brightly, helping the world to find its way. Be the light, lions. Show the way. Sincerely, Jung-Yul Choi, the International President of Lions Clubs International. And next, we're going to move over to our Global Service Department, beginning in Morocco with The Doctors Are In. On January 26th, 20 doctors, all members of Lions Club Doctors Unite in Casablanca, set out for Dar al-Ait Tamjat Taglift, a small village near Taroudant, a coastal city in the south of Morocco. Their mission, done in partnership with Mubadarat Al-Khair Association of Beni Mellal, was to provide medical care for the residents of the village. Sadly, medical coverage in Morocco is particularly lacking, says Lion Salwal E.J. Jamali, communications director for the club. Communities inside of cities have trouble getting the health care they need. Ones in villages are sometimes completely cut out of the health care system and sometimes have to travel a long way to even see a primary doctor. The lions who attended this particular caravan had specialties ranging from general medicine to dentistry to pediatrics to gynecology, among others, and they treated approximately 800 people during a two-day visit. They also initiated an oral prevention campaign in the community, provided dental consultations and extractions for adults, and distributed medicine donated by members who are pharmacists. The club also brought clothing and food baskets to hand out and, as though they weren't busy enough, began a redevelopment of the courtyard of the local primary school. We did some painting and put up some bookshelves with books for a small library that the kids could have access to anytime, says Jamali. The active club holds several humanitarian caravans each year and always goes to a different area in need. They often work with local organizations to help identify the exact needs of communities so they can plan accordingly. Money for the projects comes from several fundraisers, including the Run for Atlas, which is a race through the Atlas Mountains, and a soccer tournament called Kick It for Hope, which raises money for a special caravan dedicated to screening for ovarian and breast cancer. Nothing makes you more satisfied than the idea of knowing that we participated in relieving dental pain in a child, warming up a pregnant woman, or even helping an elderly man to gain autonomy, says club president Manal Fatah. From the United States, after flooding, the revival of an ecosystem. In 1977, the Red River Valley, which spans across North Dakota and Minnesota border, experienced the most severe flooding it had seen since 1826. While Grand Forks took the brunt of the damage, residential areas along the valley in Fargo were evacuated and many homes were destroyed. In the aftermath, the city of Fargo purchased the land and homes in the floodplain. The homes were razed and the area was banned from development. Jane Pettinger, a Lion who lives in Fargo, not far from the river, says the area was in limbo. The homes had been torn down, but the landscaping and some driveways remained. One day, a fellow Lion was walking through the area with his wife when she mentioned it could make a lovely park. He brought the idea to the club, and they agreed. They partnered with River Keepers, a local nonprofit advocating for safe and sustainable use of the Red River, and little by little, they built a park. They mowed the paths through the grasses, former lawns, mostly Kentucky bluegrass that had grown tall, created a small amphitheater for small classes, and built a viewing stand in the trees to watch the native wildlife that had eagerly returned to the area. A Boy Scout created an original sign as an eagle project, and when it began to look a bit faded, Pettinger's own son created a new one for his Eagle Scout project. "It's very well used," says Pettinger. She says on any given day, there are typically at least a dozen people at the park, fishing, bird watching, or just relaxing and enjoying nature. In 2014, Audubon Dakota established the Urban Woods and Prairies Initiatives, which aims to reestablish native riparian habitat diversity to combat the rapid decline of even the most common bird species. The initiative works with cities and park districts to target floodplain buyout properties to create quality habitat for birds. "The Red River Corridor is important for native birds," says Sarah Hewitt, Conservation Programs Manager at Audubon Dakota. "It's particularly an important migratory route for the golden-winged warbler and is the only intact migration corridor for more than 20 species of birds." Audubon Dakota bought the Fargo Lions Park into the program in 2016 and began removing the buckthorn and replacing the turf grass with native grasses and wildflowers. Incorporating a wildly diverse mix of plants creates a diversity of wildlife that can use the area, says Hewitt. "Keeping migration corridors intact is particularly important because when these are fragmented, populations are impacted," says Hewitt. "It means birds can't breed properly or find the resources they need to survive." The conservation plan includes several years of coaxing the reestablishment of native seedlings, helping to keep weeds and invasive species at bay until the native plants can establish themselves. When Audubon's seven-year plan is completed, Fargo Lions hope to continue as stewards of the land, continuing the conservation of the important landscape well into the future. "We just want it to be educational," says Pettinger. Now we have a feature article for those of you who may be interested in actually participating in some of what Lions do, titled "Fundraising During Social Distancing: How to Bring Funds to Your Community When You Can't Leave Home." When brush fires burned millions of acres of land, destroyed buildings, and led to the deaths of both people and wildlife in Australia in 2019, the Lions Club of Terry in New South Wales knew they wanted to help families, farmers, and first responders affected by the blazes. Lion Phil Grisold of the Tari Club witnessed the damage firsthand. "I was gobsmacked at what was developing before my eyes," he said. "I realized the resources would be severely stretched and that our traditional fundraising efforts would not be possible due to our need for action on the ground." In November 2019, the club launched a fundraiser on the GoFundMe online platform that to date has raised about $113,000 Australian dollars, which is equivalent to $68,000 US dollars. and 13,000, which is 13,000 more in Australian dollars than the $100,000 goal they set to provide fire relief. Raising funds is never easy, but marshaling resources when the community you serve is in the midst of a disaster takes know-how and skill. And unlike localized disasters, a pandemic that requires the majority of the global population to stay indoors and avoid contact with other people presents a new kind of challenge for Lions. How can Lions be there for those in need when they cannot actually be there? One way is through financial support. Digital fundraisers are one way for clubs to continue to raise money when large events and person-to-person fundraising just can't happen. The world is online, and there's nothing that proves it more than the COVID-19 pandemic, says Richard Stevenson of the South Tucson Cyber Lions Club in Arizona. The world is connected online. We have to be moving in that direction for service, recruiting, fundraising, and communications. While online fundraising will never entirely replace in-person fundraisers, Stevenson, Grizzold, and other Lions recommend that clubs make it part of their overall fundraising strategies. The Terry Club's GoFundMe campaign was a pivot from their traditional fundraising efforts and was motivated in part by a need to move quickly to capture interest in an event of international consequence. But when the fires hit, the club was short on volunteers. They decided to try an online fundraiser with the approval of District 201N1 and with all the monies raised going to the district for distribution. 100% of the monies raised went to fire relief in Australia's mid-coast region. While the South Tucson Lions have not yet had to cope with a natural disaster, they do use online fundraising to help support the club's causes. They partner with a local car dealer, Jim Click Jr., who provides tickets for nonprofits to sell for chances to win prizes, including a 2020 Ford F-150 Platinum truck and cash. We have tickets and we could bang on doors to sell them, but we sell them online and it's been successful for us, Stevenson says. For a little club, we raise quite a lot of money. The club raised $5,500 US in 2019 and $3,500 US in 2018, all of which went to provide vision exams and eyeglasses for children in need in Tucson. Over the past 4 years, the club has provided about 100,000 screenings. The South Tucson Club promotes the raffle via a website it developed through the Lions eClubhouse. It didn't come from a technological background, Stevenson says, but it's easy. I've been able to figure out how to build a website that now has 8,000 followers. The club's website includes a link that allows people to click to easily purchase raffle tickets through a third-party payment system. To promote the sales of tickets, the club also sends personal emails with a link to the website, has a Facebook page for the fundraiser, and posts about it on Facebook and other social media channels with the hope that the posts will be shared to people well beyond their own club and circles. If it's a compelling email or post, it will appeal to people beyond my personal friends, Stevenson says. When you see captivating photos, you say, I want to support this program. Stevenson prefers for the club to have its own fundraising website as opposed to doing a GoFundMe campaign, Facebook fundraiser, or using another online platform, because it allows him to track who is donating, to update them on what the club is doing, and to thank them. You really need to thank them, he says. I'll send them an update every 2 to 3 months on what our club is doing. My hope is that they will become supporters not just once, but for years to come. Although Stevenson is based in Arizona, he recently contributed to a fundraiser sponsored by the Indiana Cyber Lions Club that is working with a Wisconsin-based company, Fudgeraiser, to sell fudge online to raise money to offset the club's new administrative costs. We have people ordering from all over the U.S., says Carol Wellman, project chair. It adds to our base of supporters and gets the word out about what Lions do. The Indiana Club receives 30% of the fudge sales. The Fudgeraiser Company provides a website and links so people can easily make a purchase. They do everything, says Wellman. All we do is drive traffic to the link they gave us. Both Wellman and Stevenson agree that it's important to vet and understand the services that an online fundraising company will provide. Some fundraising companies are a bit more complicated and harder to manage, Wellman says. To have a successful online fundraiser through GoFundMe, Grizzold says it's helpful to tap the input of people who are familiar with social media or who are willing to learn about it. Develop a digital team with social media expertise and create a plan to spread your message, he says. Work with the traditional process, but continue to drive all interest and traffic to your campaign website. Stevenson, Grizzold, and Wellman agree that the Lions' well-regarded and trusted brand is a valuable asset that is crucial to helping them raise funds online. This is about all aspects of Lionism, Stevenson says. We're not giving up our traditions, but we need to move forward to reach people where they are today and to continue to spread the word about our important missions. And you can make a direct impact today by donating to LCIF's General Disaster Fund at lcif.org. And now our second feature article for tonight, called The Waggle Dance. After losing her sight, Ariel Get Gilbert tends to her bees using sound. Ariel Gilbert can tell a lot about her bees just by listening. She has 3 beehives on her back patio in Petaluma, California. I can hear how the bees are behaving. If they're agitated, if there are other bees trying to get into the hive, or if it's too crowded or too hot or too cold, she says. What you want to hear, she says, is a calm, steady buzz. That indicates that everything in the hive is going smoothly. When Gilbert went blind in 1988, beekeeping was one of the hobbies she figured she'd have to give up. There's so much visual information you get by looking at the honeycomb and the brood nest, Gilbert says. I didn't think I could be a good beekeeper without being able to see. But in the years since losing her sight, Gilbert has found ways to do things that she used to love. She hikes, she goes rowing, takes photographs using sound cues to locate the subject, and the list goes on. Now she's beekeeping again, too. In order to tend to her hives, Gilbert relies a lot on sound. While she misses some of the visual beauty of the bees, she says a whole new way of understanding and appreciating the bees has opened up to her. Not only are the bees beautiful in a different way, she is using sound to have a far better understanding of her hives than she ever did when she was sighted. Gilbert is in her early 60s with a crop of black hair and an athletic frame. She used to be a nurse, and with the decisive yet gentle way she moves her hands, you sense she was good at it. Although Gilbert can't see, she doesn't hesitate to open the hives in her backyard and reach down into the humming mass of thousands of bees. Her fingers softly brush against their bodies, and they don't seem to mind. She calls the bees her girls. When Gilbert was 10 years old, a swarm of bees flew into her backyard. They were looking for a new home. Hundreds of thousands of bees coalesced into a big buzzing ball on a tree, and they stayed humming in a giant mass. Gilbert's grandfather remembered the name of a local beekeeper and gave him a call. He said he'd be happy to come get the bees. When he arrived, Gilbert watched the beekeeper walk calmly over to the giant blob of bees and scoop them up with his bare hands. If handled correctly, a swarm of bees won't sting you. The beekeeper carried the swarm back to his car and left. Gilbert was mesmerized. When Gilbert was in junior high school, her parents finally capitulated to her demand for her own hive. She ordered her first bees from Sears and Roebuck. They came in the mail along with the hive, she says. The postman was terrified. He got to the door and my mom was there, and he just shoved them in her face and said, "These your bees, lady?" It took a long time for Gilbert to get used to being around bees. When I first started beekeeping, I was afraid of them, she says. She would gear up in a white suit with thick black gloves. She couldn't have imagined closing her eyes and sticking her hands down into the hive. Gilbert lost her vision instantaneously. In 1988, she was working a night shift at Marin General Hospital. The AC was on in the building, and it dried her eyes out. On the way home, she stopped at a pharmacy to get some eye drops. She opened her eyes and popped a few drops in each one. Suddenly, she was struck with intense pain and her vision completely vanished. Someone had tampered with the eye drops. They were filled with drain cleaner, and they blinded her immediately. The first few months were brutal. I felt sorry for myself. I was afraid of everything. I kind of closed myself down to, you might as well be dead, Gilbert says. I didn't think I could do anything. At first, she thought she might get her vision back. From conversations with her doctors, she slowly realized that that was never going to happen. She wasn't even going to get partial vision back. She was crushed. It was hard for her to do anything, even get up in the morning. It upended Gilbert's life. Her marriage ended, and she had to stop working as a nurse. The hospital gave her a job developing x-rays. That was the only place they were comfortable having a blind person work. So she would sit in a small dark room all day developing film. After 6 months, Gilbert reached a breaking point. I woke up one day and started projecting out what my life would be like because going in the direction I was going wasn't working, she says. I had always been very active. Now I was going to have a really boring life if I didn't do something to change this. I made the decision, no more feeling sorry for myself, Gilbert says. No more hiding, no more being afraid, because I am allowing whoever this person was to still hurt me. Gilbert enrolled at a nearby school for the blind. She lived there for 6 months to learn things like reading with Braille, using a white cane, and navigating with sound. Basically, the tricks of being blind, she says. A few years ago, a friend had some hives that needed to be looked after. She asked Gilbert if she could take them for a bit. At first, Gilbert hesitated. How could she be a beekeeper if she didn't see? After much encouragement, she decided to at least try. As soon as the hives arrived, Gilbert was relieved. She hadn't realized how much she was missing bees, and she was ecstatic to have them back in her life. Soon after they came, she realized that much of the information about bees she had gathered before with her eyes, she could now gather with her ears. Whenever Gilbert is out working with the hives, she is listening to them, keeping tabs on how they sound. She bought some microphones to make the recordings inside the hive. They give her an audio snapshot of what's happening with her bees. For instance, if she can hear if there are invader bees who have come to steal honey, or if there is a sickness in the hive and some bees have died off. Gilbert can even hear the waggle dance, which is the movement bees make to tell others where to find pollen. Not only can she discern the dance in her recordings, she has started to notice variations in the sound depending on where the pollen is located. The dance, it kind of happens in a little circle, Gilbert says. You'll hear bzz, 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 and it's different patterns depending on how far away the pollen is. Gilbert is not the first blind person to take an interest in bees. 18th century Swiss entomologist François Huber began losing his sight at age 15, but made important discoveries about the lives of bees. Researchers like Tom Seeley at Cornell University recognize that bees communicate a lot through sound. Seeley wrote a book called Honeybee Democracy about the decision-making process inside a hive, and he's currently recording them to better understand their behavior. Seeley says you can listen to an entire democratic process unfolding inside a hive. The high-pitched buzz of worker bees telling the queen it's time to fly to a new home. The short, high-pitched bursts when a bee disagrees with a decision inside the hive and wants to vote against it. And there is, of course, the waggle dance that Gilbert knows to listen for. Gilbert has since fallen in love again and remarried. She's an active volunteer in her hometown of Petaluma and has traveled extensively. After learning how indispensable guide dogs were to her own life, Gilbert began working at Guide Dogs for the Blind, promoting the school throughout the country and running their extensive volunteer program. It's been a full life since losing her sight, but not one without troubles. Years ago, Gilbert donated one of her kidneys to a friend. The friend recovered, but Gilbert suffered a rare complication that caused her remaining kidney to begin failing. She has managed it for years, but now she needs someone to donate a kidney to her. Gilbert now spends a lot of time at her home due to her health and has been kept from many activities she loves, like rowing. But she continues to take care of her hives. After losing bees once in her life, she doesn't want to go without them ever again. Tending bees without sight has shown Gilbert that all the sounds that they make are not only practical, but also incredibly beautiful. And despite the difficulties of adjusting to her loss of vision, she gained something by being forced to listen to her world. And she would never want to give up the magic of those sounds. And now we're going to move over to our In the News department, beginning with the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. April 22, 2020 marks the 50th anniversary of Earth Day. Established in 1970, the first Earth Day mobilized 20 million Americans and is credited with launching the modern environmental movement. It is now recognized as the planet's largest civic event and has led to many landmark environmental laws. In 2016, the United Nations chose Earth Day as the day to sign the Paris Climate Agreement. Join Lions around the world and choose a service project that focuses on our environment today. Also, mural increases visibility of the Lions. A new mural on the side of the Jefferson Township Lions Clubhouse and Banquet Hall in Mount Cobb, Pennsylvania, has been drawing traffic. The vibrant mural depicts a lion's head with a full, brightly colored mane, showcasing the many local services, landmarks, and volunteer projects that make their community great. Gabrielle Edwards, a high school junior and Girl Scout, designed, planned, and executed the project with the support of her club as her Gold Award project. "They were very enthusiastic," she told the Tri-County Independent. "I then actually had to pick what I wanted to paint. They gave me some ideas on what they'd like to incorporate, so I sketched up many lions and decided to do a cartoonish-looking face with the full mane of our community spirit and energy." She chose bright primary colors to maximize the visual impact of the mural. Once the wall was power washed and stripped of loose paint, she got to work. And just as any good community project should, she had many helpers. Her mother, Bonnie, and her brother, Jack, helped her paint the base coat, and her mother, also an artist with several local murals to her name, helped her sketch the head. "We took my sketch of what I wanted and measured out the center. We then found the center of the wall and worked our way out, sketching with pencils and house paint. We finished the face the first day in the heat, followed by ice cream," she told the Independent. The mane was filled in with the help of her mom and friends over the next 2 weeks. Whenever they had free time, they would stop by and make a little progress. Altogether, she estimates they spent about 60 hours painting. PDG Gail Padfield, a Jefferson Township Lion, says bookings at the banquet hall have increased since the mural went up. Built by members in 1972, the hall has always been popular. "It's a rural area without a lot of other options for events, and when the mural went up, folks started driving by to get a glimpse of what all the fuss was about. We're always surprised when people who have grown up here say they never knew we existed," she said. "But now they are coming by and booking events." And we've run out of time for today's episode of Lion Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Demi Arsenault for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. And again, 919-832-5138. Have a wonderful day.